Okay. So today, so as I mentioned that before many times, you know that we know that the Tanakh is acronym of Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, right? So three main units in the Tanakh, the Torah, five books of Moses, then we have the prophets, and then we have the Ketuvim, loosely translated as writings, right? And today we're starting that unit of the writings. The first book in the writings is Mishlei, but in the book of Mishlei there's no hidden women or nothing, so we're going to skip that. The second book is the book of Iyov, Job. And I have to be honest, this is a book that's, you know, allegedly, like, but it's not talking about a specific lady also. Anyway, I have to be honest, it always intrigued me, that book always intrigued me. I never had a chance to learn it before. So what we're going to do is we're going to really delve into this book. It's going to be probably like 4, 5, 6 weeks. Going to take us. Going to try to understand this very, very interesting and very, very...
Hopefully you will understand it.
Well, we'll see. We're going to try. We're going to go on this journey together, see what's going to happen. And it's also, it has a lot of character, like, you know, female characters, Job's wife, daughters, sisters. We're going to talk about that briefly at the end, but what's really important to me is that I think that this is probably the most interesting books in the Bible. And I think that this particular book has a extra meaning or extra special meaning to our time. And that's what we're going to try to go into. Okay, those who are not familiar with the story of Iyov, of Job, very, very, like, crunch it to two sentences. Iyov is this righteous person who's got everything. He's got family, he's got wealth, he's got everything. And then Satan comes to God, okay, that's a whole thing that we'll have to discuss, and says, well, of course Iyov is, like, you know, he's a chassid. Of course he is, you know, he's a righteous person because you gave him everything. He's, you know, everything is great, so of course he's going to be a righteous person. Let's play with that a little bit. Let's see if he's going to be so righteous if we're going to take away things from him. So first his wealth, then his health and his kids and whatever are taking away from him. And nonetheless, Yov continues to remain faithful to God, no matter what tragedies he's encountering. And at the end, God rewards him with a new family and more wealth and all that kind of stuff. Okay, and that's basically the book. Fine. Now, before getting into the book today, what I would like to do is kind of an intro to the book itself. Okay? And let's see what we can do. In order to understand what makes this book so unique, we have to look at what the Ramban wrote. So the Ramban, source number one, the Ramban, as we know, he wrote a commentary, extensive commentary on the entire Torah. But he also wrote very, you know, extensive commentary on the book of Iyov. And he writes the following. ויש דבר מכאיב הלבבות ומדאיב המחשבות, and there's something that is troubling. ממנו לבד נמשכו רבים בכל הדורות לכפירה. From that particular issue, because of that particular issue, throughout the generations, people became heretics. והוא הראות בעולם משפט מעוקל וצדיק ורע לו, רשע וטוב לו. And this notion of distorted cases of punishment and reward. We see righteous people have getting punished, horrible life, and evil people that are doing great. כי אמרו מדוע דרך פלוני ופלוני צלחה, ולמה פלוני ופלוני שיראו צדיקים avadu. Okay, why? How come this righteous person is suffering so much and has a terrible life, and this evil person has a great life? Okay, and he says this is a difficult issue that brought many throughout generations to atheism, right? This idea of tzadik v'ra lo, rasha v'tov lo, we call it in Hebrew, or, you know, a punishment and reward and punishment. And he said this is the most troubling issue, and this book is dealing with this issue. The entire book is dedicated to that particular question. And therefore, the Ramban see tremendous importance to that book, and therefore he chose to write an extensive commentary for this book. Next paragraph, we're still in one. Veda, and no. כי מאשר העניין הזה פנה פינה גדולה בתורה, וראות העניין בתחילתו. מבוכה רבה, נתייחד לו בו ספר אחד כולו, והוא ספר איוב. And because this is such an issue that we find throughout the Bible, this is why, and it's such an important issue, that this book is dedicated to that issue. Okay? And then he continues, third paragraph.
ויש מרבותינו שאמר,
and some of our sages say,
כי משה רבינו כתבו,
that this book was written by Moshe.
ונאמר לו מפי הגבורה,
and that was given to him or transmitted to him from God.
עניין האיש ההוא והחברים האמה,
that person, i.e. Job and his friends, because most of the book is conversation between Job and his friends.
כאשר נאמר לו מפי הגבורה ספר בראשית,
just like the book of Genesis was taught or given to Moshe from God.
ונצטווה בכתיבתו, and he was commanded to write it, מפני היות עניינו שורש באמונה ויסוד התורה.
It's a root of our belief and the foundation of the Torah. So what is it the Ramban saying here? Two things. One, he accepts that approach that Moshe wrote this book. Not everybody is going to agree with that. We're going to see it. But okay, at least one of the opinions is that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote this book. Number one. And how did he write it? From God. So it's God told Moshe to write this book. That's Ramban. Next line.
וראוי הוא לא בוודאי שהרי עניין השטן ויבואו בני האלוקים להתייצב וגומר לא נודע אלא בנבואה.
Meaning that this encounter between God and the Satan and all that kind of stuff that is described in the beginning of the book, no one can come up with that. Nobody can know that stuff without God telling them that. So, this is why he concludes that was Moshe Rabbeinu, that was the prophecy, God told him directly, and this is how we end up with this. Okay? He said, there's no other way to explain it. Nobody knows what's going on, debates between Satan and God, all that. He said, unless God talks to you directly, like God spoke to Moshe and told him to do that, nobody can come up with that. Now, and this idea that Moshe got it from God, this is an indication why this book is so important. So what the Ramban is doing, he compares this book, the book of Job, with the book of Bereshit, the book of Genesis. And he says in both of them, Shoresh be'emuna ve'yesod ha'Torah, this is a root of our belief and the foundation of the Torah. Okay? And if you look at source number two, Arav Shvel, in his intro to Yov, says the following. Shnei Perushav Shel Ramban, he analyzes the Ramban's commentary. He said that both
ודה רמבן is saying, למקרא, פירושו לתורה וספר איוב, הם איפה יצירה אחידה הקשורה קשר פנימי, that means, he said, the commentary of the Ramban to the Torah and the Ramban's commentary on the book of Job are part of one big work. They are connected. I.e., because, and now we understand why, because according to the Ramban, Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who wrote the book of Yov from God, just like Chumash, just like the five books of Moses. And therefore, it's part of a, it's the same, it's a, at least the commentary of Ramban is one work that is divided, but it's one work. Okay? Now, this book has over 40 chapters that deals with, as I said, this issue of reward and punishment. And it's not that simple. You have to understand. Because what is it? This issue of reward and punishment is what is it? It's a defiance and a claim towards God saying, you do injustice. You do things, you God, do things in the wrong way. This is not that simple to say that. And not only that, you have to understand, it's a critique, so to say, against God, and God gives it room in his book. The Bible is God's book. It gives it legitimacy. Not only that, it's only, okay, so you're going to say, okay, it's only one book. This issue of reward and punishment, you can find it in the entire Bible. The entire Bible, at some point, is dealing with that issue. Every book in the Bible deals with that on some level. There's a lot of examples. There's a lot of stuff. We're going to get there in a second. Okay? And that was, sometimes it's more hidden, sometimes it's like explicit, but it is it pretty much all over the Bible. So this is critique against God. Nonetheless, it's evident throughout the entire Bible, i.e. God's book, which is fascinating. Now, if we're going to take just two examples, just two tiny examples, Abraham. Okay, Abraham Avinu, we just read this in the Parsha on Shabbat, we're going to read about him, right? He always obeys. He passes 10 tries, including what we were just read in last week's part on Shabbat, leaving his homeland this coming Shabbat, Vayera, the Akedah, binding of Isaac, right? The greatest believer, right? He's doing everything God is commanding him. And nonetheless, he's asking God somewhat in a chutzpahdik way, where is the godly justice? Where is it? Right? If you look, the story of Sodom, right? The Torah says, "V'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chata'im l'Hashem me'od." The people of Sodom are very evil, right? And God decides, "Hamchase ani me'Avraham v'Avraham ha'yo yiyeh l'goy gadol." What am I like? You know, I need to share. I need to tell Abraham what I'm going to do. Right? That's right after the visit of the three angels. He said, I need to tell him what's going to happen. And therefore, God decides to tell Abraham about his plan to destroy Sodom. And what happens? Look at number three. Abraham starts to argue with God. You're going to kill the righteous with the evil. חלילה לך מעשות כדבר הזה להעמיד צדיק עם רשע. You can't do that, חס וחלילה, that you're going to kill the righteous together with the wicked one. ויחד צדיק רשע, the צדיק and the רשע are going to have the same sentence, the same destiny. חלילה לך, השופט כל הארץ לא יעשה משפט. You are the judge, you are the ultimate judge, and you're not going to do justice? Right? I mean, if somebody today even would say that to a judge, to a federal judge, would be probably sent to, you know, custody because of contempt. Right? But Avram is still doing that against God. Right? Here is another example. משה רבנו, right? משה,
the greatest prophet we ever had, the greatest leader of the Jewish people, whatever you want to call it, he's very disturbed by this issue as well. And already in the beginning of his role as the leader of the Jewish people, he says the following. Here's a beautiful way the Midrash brings it. Look at number 4.
וישוב משה אל השם ויאמר, השם, למה הרעות על העם הזה? Why
do you do all these bad things for these people?
באותה שעה בא משה והשיב דברים.
So remember the incident. So what happened? He comes to Moshe, right? Moshe came the first time to Pharaoh. And not only that, right, they were still slaves. And what Pharaoh said, because of that, I'm going to make like life even harder.
So Moshe goes back to God and he says, "Lama areot alam hazeh? Because of you, God, because of you sent me, now things are worse. So what are you doing?"
Right? So here is what the Midrash continues. באותה שעה בא משה וישיב דברים לפני הקדוש ברוך הוא. And he has complaints. Moshe has those complaints towards God. אמר לו, "Lama areot? Why did you make things worse for the Jewish people?"
מהו השם למה הרעות? What does it mean?
Why did you make things worse?
בנוהג שבעולם בשר ודם אומר לחברו, למה אתה עושה כן?
He said, that's the pshat. That's the simple answer. Just like when you go to your friend and you say, what are you doing? Are you crazy? You make things wrong. Right? He said, that's exactly the way Moshe approached God. The simple way. He was angry with him. And Moshe amar lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lama areot al ha'am hazeh? Out of anger, he's talking to God. Right? Later on, there's a... fast forward. Moshe is already in the desert with the Jewish people. And after the sin of the golden calf, right? So Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to destroy the Jewish people and said, I'm going to start a new nation out of you, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's familiar with that, right? So Moshe, at that point, he said, after the whole episode is finished, said, Hodi'aini na edrachecha. I want to know your ways. Right? Moshe says to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hodi'aini na edrachecha. I want to know your ways. And the Gemara is dealing with that and says, what does it mean? What exactly he wanted to know? What does it mean? What ways was Moshe interested of knowing? What exactly is he talking about? So the Gemara in number 5.
Hodieni na edarachecha, amar lefanav. Moshe said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel olam, mipnei ma yesh tzadik v'tov lo, v'yesh rasha v'tov lo, yesh rasha v'tov lo, v'yesh rasha v'ra lo.
He said, I need to understand that system of reward and punishment. I need to understand that, how that's possible. They have wicked people and they have good life and they're righteous people and they have a difficult life. How that's possible. I need to get it. I need to understand the methodology, understand the systematic, the system. And that's what he wants to understand. Okay, we don't know exactly what he learned. Of course, God said to him, Lo yera'u panai, rak achorai yera'u. Okay, whatever. You can't really understand because this is why you're a human being and I'm God. And, you know, you can't really understand my ways. Okay, we do understand that Moshe, at the end of the day, he accepted God's words, right? Because at the end of his life, at Ha'azinu, he says, Hatzur tamim po'olo kechol drachav mishpat, el emunah ve'enav el tzadik ve'yasharu. Right? He says, like, kol drachav mishpat. There is justice in all of God's ways at the end of the day, even if we don't understand that. By the way, that's what we say in a funeral. Even if we don't understand sometimes, you know, fortunately sometimes we're talking about tragedies and we don't understand what's going on. We don't understand the ways of God. And we don't understand, you know, how justice is executed there. And nonetheless, we, as a proclamation of our belief in God, we say, Kichol drachav mishpat hatzur tamim po'alo. We accept it without understanding it. That's what Moshe taught us. Okay. Another remark about this book. If you look at number 6, you see the Midrash Rabbah. The Midrash Rabbah is a very interesting story about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says the following: דרש רבי עקיבא מעשה דור המבול בגנזק של מדי ולא בחו. וכיוון שהזכיר להם מעשה איוב, מיד בחו. What does it mean? It means that Rabbi Akiva tells the people the story of the flood. I don't know, it might be like some spelling mistake here. But they didn't cry. Even though they heard the story of the flood, that was a terrible story. The whole human race was wiped out. It didn't do anything, didn't have any effect, any impact. However, when he started telling them the story of Yov, everybody started crying. Let's understand it for a second. Rabbi Akiva, when does he live? He lives in a very difficult period of time. Okay? Not only that, right? There's a persecution. Not only that, Rabbi Akiva himself was executed by the Romans. Right? Very, very difficult time in Jewish history. So he wants to get the people to do tshuva. He wants to get people to repent or whatever. Right? So what does he do in order to get them, whatever, repent? He tells them the story of the flood. It's the most horrific story in the Bible. People were so bad that God says there is no way to repair this. Things are so bad, I need to start all over. I need to wipe out the entire universe and start again. Right? And Rabbi Akiva thinks that if he's going to tell them about this terrible punishment of destroying the universe, people are going to start thinking, yikes, you know, we should repent, we should change our ways. As we say in English, gurnisht. Nothing. Didn't do anything. They heard the stories. Nothing. However, he tells them the story of Yov, and everybody started crying. Why is it the story of Yov had such an impact on them, and the story of the flood had zero impact on them? They can relate to it. Why? Because it's the story of one individual. Okay, if you want to, you know, you don't deal with the whole world, great numbers, whatever, all that kind of stuff. You talk about one particular person who is suffering, that strikes a chord. By the way, today, the approach when, in Shoah studies is the same thing. You don't talk about 6 million, you don't talk about it's numbers that we cannot relate to, at least the younger generation. People cannot relate. It's too much. Then you lose interest. You bring the story of one person, right? Anne Frank, whatever that is. Like you bring a story of one family, one survivor, one whatever, right? One righteous person, one act of kindness. And that is something that people can relate to, right? And that is what the author, whether it's Moshe Rabbeinu or somebody else, author of the book of Job, understood as well. In order to get people to identify with the book, you need to tell the story of one individual. This is something I can relate to. 6 million, I don't even understand what it means. Right, it's all numbers.
Yeah, but when you talk about, maybe less money.
Right, a deficit of $100,000. Okay, I understand that. $50 trillion, yeah. Okay, I get it. Okay, so we talked a little bit about this idea of reward and punishment in the Bible, and we said that it appears throughout the Bible. We go into the first pasuk of the book. Ish haya be'eretzus, Iyob shmo, v'haya ha'ish ha'u tam v'yashar v'yere Elohim v'sar mira. There was a man in the land of Uz named Job. That man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. Now, every time we read a book from the Bible, first question is going to be, when and where those events took place? Right? Usually, the answer is at the very beginning of the book. Okay? Just two tiny examples. Look at number 8 from the prophets, for example. Right? A. Chazon Yishayahu ben Amoz, okay, the vision of Yishayahu, the son of Amoz, Asher Chaza al Yehuda v'Yerushalayim. When was that? Bime Yotam Achaz Yechizkiyahu Melchei Yehuda. Very specific time in history. We know the kings of Yehuda were Yotam, Achaz, Yechizkiyahu, Uzziyahu. Four kings. I know that is about roughly a period of 40 plus years, 40, 50 years. Boom. I know exactly when that happened in history. And I know where. Yehuda v'Yerushalayim. Kingdom of Yehuda, area of Yerushalayim. Very simple. Yirmiyahu. B. Same goes. Divir Yirmiyahu v'Nechilkiyahu v'Nagonim v'Shawanadu v'Eretz v'Nyamin. Okay? These are the words of Yirmiyahu. Asher haya dvar Hashem elav b'mei. Right? He had the words of God when? The times of Yoshiyahu, king of Yehuda, in the 13th year of his reign. Very, very clear. We know exactly when was that. Or for example, the next pasuk, Vayhi b'imei Yehoyakim ben Yoshiyahu ben Melech Yehuda ad tom ha-12 shana l'tzidkiyahu ben Yoshiyahu melech Yehuda ad gelot Yerushalayim b'chodesh ha-chamishi. We know not only what year was that, we know also even what month that prophecy was given. Okay? So it's very, very clear. What about our book? So we have a place, Eretz Utz, that we don't understand exactly where it is, what is it, but there's nothing that tells us about when. Right? So we said, Ish haya be'eretz Utz, Iyov shmo. There was a man in the land of Utz, and his name was Iyov. Now, when it comes to the place, Eretz Utz, we don't know anything about that. Maybe it's over the rainbow, right? Because the Wizard of Oz, in Hebrew, it says, Hakosem me'eretz Utz. You use that word, Utz. So maybe it's over the rainbow. Nobody knows exactly where it is. But it's interesting, if you look at number 9, there are three places, A, B, and C, that we see the word Utz in the Bible. They're all in Sefer Bereshit. And they're all, every time it's a name of a person, three different lists. One is, in A, it's the firstborn of Aram. Aram was the youngest of Shem. Okay? In B, we can see that this is Utz was the firstborn of Nahor. Nahor was the brother of Abraham that was married to Milcah. Okay, so it's a nephew of Abraham, I guess. And there's another third Utz. The firstborn of Dishan, or Dishon, who was the youngest of Seir HaChori. Okay, whatever that is. That means three individuals that are in the book of Genesis that are called Utz. That's it. That's all we know about. Now, Rashi, I didn't bring it here. Rashi, about the place, because of that, because we said in A, it's the firstborn of Aram, Rashi says that the land of Utz is in Aram. Aram is Syria and parts of Lebanon of today. Okay? That's Rashi. The Ibn Ezra and the Ramban say, no, this is Esav. Like as the descendants of Esav, which takes it as widely as you want, even to Rome. Whatever that is. Okay, this is more about the geography, which is not really our interest here. Now, Here's what's fascinating. Later on, we're going to hopefully today, we're going to talk more about the Rambam, not the Ramban that we brought before, the Nachmanides, but the Rambam, Maimonides, and his approach to this book. Now, the Rambam claims this story never took place. It was not, it's not real. This is all allegory. We're going to talk about that in a minute. So when it comes to the place, the geography of Utz, he said that's not a place. Utz, look at number 10. Here's the Rambam, exactly. Ish haya be'eretz Utz, v'hu tzivui be'etza ve'hanhaga Utzu etza. V'ke'ilu yomar lecha, histakel bezot ha'etza v'yitbonen bo. The Rambam says, the word Utz doesn't come, it's not a name of a place, it's not a name of a, but rather, it's the land of wisdom, i.e., look into that book to draw wisdom. Look closely in this book, learn it, because there's wisdom here. From the word Eitza. Eitza is?
Advice.
Advice. Okay.
It's by Achitofel. It says, Utzu Eitza v'tufa.
No. That's not Achitofel. That's a pasuk from Tehilim. David writes that maybe in the context when he has issues with Achitofel. Maybe you might be right, but it's not Achitofel. That's David says that. Okay. So according to the Rambam, it's a different story. It's not, it's an allegory. It's not a real place. It's not a real person. And therefore the word Utz has to do with the word Eitza, advise, wisdom, draw wisdom from that place, from that book, but it's nothing to do with a place. Okay, now, let's talk about the time, the period in which the story is taking place. Obviously, the answer is not going to come from the book itself. Okay, the book doesn't say anything about that. However, the rabbis dealt with that a lot, specifically in the tractate of Baba Batra. Look at number 11. There are 9 opinions here that I kind of like put there, skipping the stuff in between. 11. Aleph. First. Moshe katav sifro ufarashat Bilam ve'Iyov. Who wrote the book of Iyov, book of Job? Moshe Rabbeinu. Not only that, we already talked about the Ramban in the beginning, and we can see that the Ramban follows this approach of this opinion in the Gemara. Messiah le Rabbi Levi bar Lechma, Dama Rabbi Levi Lechma, Iyov bimei Moshe haya, Ktiv hacha mi iten efo, v'yichtevun milei, uktiv hatam uvava yivada efo. Okay, so it means what? You know what? Let's see the kind of like all the different opinions and then discuss it in a second. Okay, it'll be easier. Okay, so opinion number one, Aleph, it was written by Moshe. Okay, fine. Bet. We can go directly to the bolded. Iyov lo haya velo nivra ela mashal haya. Okay, opinion number 2. Just like the Rambam. The Rambam obviously based his words on the Gemara. The Gemara says, never happened. It's an allegory. It's a story. Okay, and that's the Rambam holds. Gimel. Iyov bimei shfot hashoftim haya. Time of the judges. Remember that? Book of Judges, whatever. Yeah? Fine. That's third opinion. Fourth opinion. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha omer, Iyov bimei Achashverosh haya, times of Megillat Esther. Everybody has proofs, don't worry. Maxine is looking at me, are you making this up? No, I'm not making this up. Number 5, Rabbi Natan omer, Iyov bimei Malchut Shva haya, i.e. the times of Shlomo HaMelech. Vav, sixth opinion, Chachamim omrim, Iyov bimei Kasdim haya. Okay? Exactly.
Ur Kasdim is Abraham.
Zayin, the seventh opinion. Ve'yesh omrim Iyov bimei Yaakov haya.
Was the time of Jacob. Not only that, ve'dina bat Yaakov nasa. And who was his wife later on even? That's Dina, the granddaughter of Yaakov.
Okay, fine. What's interesting? Ve'kulo tanai svir alahu diyov miYisrael hava levar miYesh omrim. And everybody, i.e. so far, all the opinions says that he was Jewish, except for one opinion that said he was not Jewish. Number 8, Rava Amar Iyov Bimei Meraglim Haya, the times of the spies. This is where he... And number 9, Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Elazar Damrat Ravayu, Iyov Me'olei Gola Haya, i.e., times of Shivat Zion, i.e., with Ezra and Nehemiah. But towards Second Temple, after destruction of the First Temple, much later in history. So here you go. You have 9 different opinions about when, if that story happened, when did it happen? 9 different opinions. Now, we have 9 different opinions. What can we learn from the fact that we have 9 different opinions? It seems that almost every period in history, somebody says it was there, right? Right? Now, how did the Chachamim learn? How did they come to those ideas? So if you look at Aleph, the first one, it says, what is the methodology by which they come to those conclusions? It's based on words that appear in 2 stories. And in here I brought only one. So that means the first opinion says that it was the time of Moshe. Based on what? Because the word Eifo appears Bame Yivada Eifo, and also Eifo V'Yichtevun Mila. Iten Eifo V'Yichtevun Mila. So the fact that we see the word Eifo both by the times of Moshe and at the times of Iyov, this is how the Gemara decides, or at least those Chachamim in that particular opinion, they decide, that's a proof that it was and at that time. Same goes for all the other opinions, except for the Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani that says it never happened. Okay, so this is the methodology. Now, here's the problem. Because we can find many, many other words that you can find in both. So what are you going to say? So how you can reconcile that, right? But the Gemara says that, yes, you're right, there are other words, but there's always an additional word that you can find only there, only by Moshe, for example. And therefore, that's the proof that you can, obviously by Iyov, and therefore, that's the proof. That's the Gemara. Here is what I would like to suggest. That perhaps it's not only based on a word that appears in both places, but rather it's kind of pointing us on a certain personality that deals with that particular issue of the book, i.e. reward and punishment. And this is applicable to each one of the opinions that the Gemara brings here, actually 8 out of the 9. Because remember, it didn't happen. I'm going to, so the Gemara didn't get us like much further, but we can learn a couple of things, just summarizing. One, there's a machloka, there's a debate whether Iyov was Jewish, right? Pretty much everybody agree he was Jewish. According to one opinion, he was not Jewish. Now, it seems that the Gemara in the beginning tries to pin it down to what time did he live, when did he live, Iyov. However, seems to me The Gemara is not interested in a history lesson, just to tell us and what. Who cares? Does it really matter? Right? And I'm going to prove it. The first opinion says what? That he lived in time of Moshe. Right? What about number 8? Look at number Chet. Rava amar Iyov b'mei meraglim hayah, the times of the spies. Well, it's the same time. So what's the machloket here? Didn't Moshe send the meraglim? It's the same time. Right? So what is it? Right? So what is the difference between those two opinions? And it seems to me that what the Chachamim here are trying to teach us is about similar ideas or striking similarities between the times of Iyov and the different periods that they're mentioned here. That means, hold on, that means if they say it's the times of the spies, that means there's a connection, a similar idea, there's a connection between the story of the spies and the story of Iyov. That's what they're trying to teach us. Hold on, just let me just finish this idea. I'm going to demonstrate it. Look at the third opinion, for example. The third opinion, Gimel, says, Iyov bimei shvot ha-shoftim haya. Right? Times of the shoftim, judges. Right? Book of Judges. Right? But what is it? What is it exactly? He doesn't say time of judges, he said, "Bimei Shvot HaShoftim."
The justice was not there.
No. Shvot HaShoftim, Vayehi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim, that's a very specific pasuk that sends us where? The book of Ruth. Vayehi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim, this is how the book starts. Vayehi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim, Vayehi Ra'av Ba'aretz, Vayelech. Etc. So it's not the judges. He says the judges, but it's not really the judges. He is being very specific to the book of Ruth, the Megillah. Right? And we can find similarities between those two books. For example, one, both stories, we're talking about a successful family that they have everything. They have wealth, they have children, they have everything, and at once, boom, loses everything. Right? In Book of Ruth.
Yes.
Elimelech, Machlon, and Chilion both die. They lose all their wealth, everything. What happens with Iyov? He's got everything. Satan comes, boom. His wealth is gone. His kids died, all of them. At once, right? Because the house like fell on them, whatever. Boom. He loses everything in one instant. And it seems that the family has no realistic chance for a comeback. Okay? Another point. Both individuals complain. Right? Naomi, Shaddai Hemarli, that God was bitter to me, and also Iyov, but they say it, they realize that God is behind all that stuff. Okay? And the language is very, very similar. Iyov says, Chai El Hesir Mishpati veShaddai Hemar Nafshi. Naomi says, almost the same language, saying, God did this to me. And by the way, these are the only two books in the Bible where the word Shaddai is used to call God. Fascinating. Next, in both stories, the surrounding, everybody around, reacts in like shock you know, for this tragedy. That also they say that there were, even their physical appearance was affected by it. Right? On the friends of Iyov, it says, "Vayisu et enehem erachok velo yikiru vayisu kolam vayivku." The friends of Iyov did not recognize him. Because, you know, you can imagine, somebody loses everything, and it's shown. Right? And also, when Naomi comes back to Beit Lechem, it says, "Vatehom kol ha'ir alehen vatomarna hazot Naomi." The whole city, this is what? This is Naomi. They didn't recognize her. Both stories have a happy end. Okay? The broken family is revived. Yov have new kids, new children, and Naomi have children and a grandson, a great-grandson, right? There's also a similarity in the way salvation came. Iyov sees four generations. And the Megillah, the Book of Ruth, ends with what? The fourth generation of Naomi, which is King David. Iyov had seven children later on, after the tragedy. Seven children. Shiv'ana banim. And when it comes to Naomi, right? When they talk about Ruth, they said about her, Asher hi tova lach mishiv'a banim. Ruth is better than seven boys. So again, it's this similarity. So I'm sure Rabbi Eliezer knew all that stuff. I have no doubt. He knew all that stuff. And he saw those similarities. So when Rabbi Eliezer says, Iyov, bimei shvot ha-shoftim haya, he was in the times of shvot ha-shoftim, it means that it's not only a historic point, but rather he tries to show us the similarities between the two stories. And because those similarities, we have to look at what is different between those books. What is it that made the change? And of course, in the book of Ruth, we're talking about the human kindness, right? That's the motive, or this is the answer. This is the answer of the book of Ruth. How this family was able to survive, to, you know, pick up itself, right? The whole book is about human kindness. It's chesed, right? Ruth is doing chesed with Naomi when she stays with her. Boaz is doing chesed with Ruth in the field. Naomi is doing chesed when she's trying to find a solution for Ruth. Ruth is doing chesed with Boaz by marrying him, etc., etc., etc. It's all about chesed, right? And so the moral of that book, of the book of Ruth, is what? That the human acts of kindness can take a person out from a broken situation, right? The power of human kindness is to help people, is to revive, to put together the broken pieces to that extent that it brings King David, the ultimate king of Israel. That's the message of the book of Ruth. However, what's the message of Job? Job and his friends, most of the book is the conversation between Job and his friends. And they talk about philosophical and moral and ethics and all that kind of stuff. There's not even one single act that Iyov or his friends are doing in order to rebuild, in order to fix things, they're not active, they're not doing. It's all about talking. They sit and talk the whole time. They don't do anything. When it comes to Rut, it's all about action. When it comes to Yov, it's all about talking. It's in theory. Okay? It's all right. So the book of Yov look at the human tragedy from a what? A different perspective, the perspective of God. Not man that doesn't see the full magnitude of things is going to one is going to make anything or is going to be responsible for anything, but rather he needs to understand its place. Everything is going to come from God. God is the one that is in ultimate control. God is the one who's going to make, who is responsible for everything. So, both books teach us that we should not, that, you know, one should not get into despair, but the tikkun, the repair, is going to occur because of human effort, i.e. kindness, human kindness, and what's called godly kindness. When Rabbi Eliezer says, Iyov bimei Shvat HaShoftim haya, that Iyov lived in the times of Shvat HaShoftim, he wants to teach us that when we come to learn the book of Iyov, we have to open the book of Rut also, and to understand that there is a connection and there is relations between the two books. Moving on. So we said that we have different opinions about the period in which Iyov lived. However, there's one opinion, as I mentioned before, that is different. Right? Opinion bet. Iyov lo haya velo nivra ela mashal haya. Iyov never existed. This story is allegory. It was not a reality at all. There's nothing to look in the pages of history. There's nothing, you know. Now, we could have looked at that and say, okay, this is Da'at Yachid. This is only one opinion versus eight, right? This is whatever. You go by the majority, right? Usually that's what we say. Majority rules. Eight versus one. But the Rambam picks specifically on this one, right? The Rambam that we quoted already in the beginning in source 10. Rambam, who knew all the Gemara, specifically adopts that particular minority opinion. What's going on here? So let's delve into the Rambam and understand what's going on over there. Number 12. Inyan Iyov nifla umikat ma she'anachnu bo. Ratza lomar shehu mashal lebe'er de'ot bnei adam ba'hashgacha. Something that we're dealing with, Rambam says, it's how people are under the hashgacha, under are as the subjects of God. וכבר ידעת באורם ומקצת מקצתם, okay? We already discussed that, he says. איוב לא היה ולא נברא אלא משל היה. He said, it never happened, it's an allegory. ואשר חשבו שהיה ונברא ושהוא עניין שאירע, and those who thought that it was a real story, לא ידעו לו לא זמן ולא מקום. Those people don't know the place, they don't know the time. אלא קצת החכמים שאמרו בימי האבות, וקצתם אמרו שהיה בימי משה, וקצתם אמרו שהיה בימי דוד, וקצתם אמרו שהיה מעולי בבל, וזה ממה שיחזק מאמר מי שאמר לא היה ולא נברא. He said that that's the best proof, the fact that everybody comes with a different opinion, that's the best proof that they have no idea what they're talking about, and there's no proof for any period in time, and therefore it didn't happen. Okay. And he continues, ולפי שתי הדעות, רצה לומר, אם היה או לא היה, הדברים מהם אשר בפתיחת הספר, רצה לומר, מאמר השטן ומאמר השם אל השטן, ומסור איוב בידו, כל זה משל בלא ספק לכל בעל דעת. And he said, especially when we talk about the beginning of the book, i.e. this conversation between God and the Satan, the fact that God told the Satan, do whatever you want, blah, 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 and God goes along with the plan and all that kind of stuff. He said, anyone who's got any tiny bit of an intelligence understand this is not a real story. אלא שהוא משל לא כשאר המשלים כולם, אבל משל שנקלו בו פליאות בדברים שהם כבשונו של עולם, והתבהרו בספקות גדולות ונגלו ממנו תעלומות שאין למעלה מהן. He said, and what's the point that we have this משל, this allegory, is because, you know, through that we understand a lot of other things, i.e. perhaps how things are handled up there, how God deals with the other angelic being, all that kind of stuff, but it still does make any, it's not a proof. He said, if anything, it's a proof that that stuff didn't happen. Next. ותחילת מה שתסכל בו, אמרו, איש היה בארץ עוץ, הביא שם משתתף והוא עוץ, שהוא שם איש את עוץ בחורו, והוא ציווי בעצה ובהנהגה עוץ העצה, וכאלו יאמר לך, יסתכל בזאת העצה ויתבונן בו, ועלה בידך ענייניו ואביניהם, וראה הדעות האמיתיות מהן. And again, he goes back to what we quoted before, that the fact that specifically the author chose the name Utz to show that it comes from the word advice, i.e. it's something to learn from, but it's not a specific place nor a specific name. It's none of that stuff. And therefore, it didn't happen. And the point is that the fact that the Rambam believes in that, it means that this is a serious opinion and we have to deal with that. Just going to remind you that the Rambam, as we quoted in the beginning, see it as a real story that was given to Moshe as a continuation of the Chumash, of the Torah. Yes?
I think the connection between the Rishit and Iyot and Moshe Rol has to do more with the creation. Because when people are down and they believe in God, they have to be remembered that there is a God, and this is
okay.
The connection.
Okay, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. 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 So it's easy for us to identify and to learn something from a real story. Okay, there was a person, he lived in whatever, fine, be inspired from that, you're going to learn from that, etc. How are we supposed to learn from something that is just an allegory, something that never happened? It's not, right? It's harder. But in order to understand better the debate between the Ramban and the Rambam, let's take a look at another example from the Rambam. I'm in 13. רמב"ם מורה נבוכים says the following. כבר ביארנו כי מכל מקום שנזכר בו ראיית מלאך או דיבורו, שזה אומנם הוא במראה הנבואה או בחלום. Every time that the text talks about an angel or something like that, or something, that it is a vision or prophecy or a dream, ודע זה ואבינהו מאוד. וירא אליו השם באלוני ממרא, right? When the pasuk says that God came to Abraham באלוני ממרא, that's this week's parsha, the visit of the three angels. Radical idea. Look what he says. וכן אמר עוד בעניין יעקב, אמרו ויעבה כשימו, שהוא בצורת הנבואה. And also the battle that Yaakov had with the angel. וכן ביעקב אמר ויפגו בו מלאכי אלוקים. ואחר כן התחיל לבאר איך קרה שפגו בו. And also the story that Yaakov is running from Esav, right? The story of the ladder, right? The angels going up and down in the ladder. All that stuff. ואמר שהוא שולח שלוחים ופעל ועשה ויוותר יעקב לבדו. וזהו מלאכי אלוהים הנאמר עליהם תחילה ויפגו בו מלאכי אלוהים. וזה יתאבקו את הדיבור כולו במראה הנבואה. Now, if I would say that stuff, I would definitely lose my job. But the Rambam says, all those examples never happened. Yaakov did not physically fight with anybody. It was in his own inside. Okay? He didn't have that vision that he had, obviously, of the people, the angels going up and down. It didn't happen, meaning it was in his dream only. And also, even Abraham, with the angels coming to visit him, it was a dream, a vision, prophecy, whatever you want to call it. That stuff didn't happen. That's the Rambam. Okay. That's exactly what he says.
All the prophets too.
Correct.
So that's why you lose the job.
So, according to the Rambam, some stories from the Torah did not happen the way we read them. They did not happen in reality, but rather it was just a dream, just like Avram was sitting in the, like, by the tent. And see the three angels, all that kind of stuff, right? Or the story that Yaakov is fighting that the angel, and therefore he is limping after that, right? Now the Ramban, look at number 14. He quotes the Ramban because he lived a little bit after. Okay, he brings the Ramban. אמר הכתוב תחילה כי נראה אליו השם במראות הנבואה ואיך הייתה המראה הנבואה הזאת כי נשא ידם במראה והנה ג' אנשים נמצבים עליו ויאמר אם נא מצאתי חן בעיניך זה סיפור מה שאמר במראה נבואה לאחד הגדול מהם. Okay, he quotes the Rambam and he says that the Rambam, according to the Rambam, this was all a vision. It didn't happen. Next paragraph in 14. והנה לדבריו לא לש עשרה עוגות ולא עשה אברהם בן בקר וגם לא צחקה שרה, רק הכל מרבים. כן, בחלום הזה ברוב עניין כחלומות השקר כמעט תועלת להראות לו כל זה. So he said, according to the Rambam, Sarah did not go to the kitchen, she didn't make those cakes, right? Because all that was just a vision. She didn't make those cakes, and they didn't bring the meat for them, and Sarah did not laugh when she heard that she's going to have a child. Everything is a vision, just a dream. Right? That's what he said. That's the Rambam. He said, if that's just a dream, how come it's so detailed and there's so many little understandings there? What's the point? What's the point? It's just a dream. So what's the point? Okay, so the Rambam completely disagrees with the Rambam here, right? Not only that. וכן אמר, 15, בעניין ויאבק איש עמו, same goes for this story of Yaakov fighting the angel. ולא ידעתי למה היה צולע לרחוב בהקיץ, ולמה אמר, כי ראיתי פני אלוהים פנים אל פנים ותן יצא נפשי. He said, I don't understand. According to the Rambam says that what? That it didn't happen, it was just a dream. Yaakov had a dream that he's fighting with somebody. Well, you know, if it's a dream, why when he woke up, he's limping? Physically he's limping, the Torah says. It's just a dream. כי הנביאים לא יפחדו שימותו מפני מראות הנבואה וכבר ראה מראה גדולה ונכבדת מאוד. כי גם את השם הנכבד ראה פעמיים רבות במראה הנבואה. He said all the other stuff is just like everything is a dream. It makes absolutely no sense. Right? So this particular incident, how that's like if it's in a dream, how come he, Yaakov, physically is limping when he wakes up? Right? So already dealing with that, it's the Rambam's son, Rabbi Avraham. He talks about that and he tries to explain his father's opinion, number 16. He says the following. Yes, yes. Listen to this. Al tishal ech eraze. Don't ask how that's happened that indeed Yaakov, you know, was limping. במצב שאינו מציאות אלא דמיון. From just a dream, something that is not real. שהרי האדם לפעמים יראה בחלום כאילו הוא עמל ועיקץ או עייף, הוא רואה כאילו יקו אותו ויקץ ברגע של כאב. He said, because we know. People, sometimes they dream that they're being hit or that they experience something and they physically, they feel the pain. לפי שהאיברים מתפעלים על ידי כוח דמיון. Because the limbs, the organs are affected by, he calls the power of imagination, but let's call it the brain. ואם יהיה כך על ידי השפעת חלום, רגיל, כל שכן שיהיה על ידי השפעת חלום נבואי. And if that happened because of a regular dream, when you go to sleep, so על אחת כמה וכמה, even much more so, a dream that is caused by God. Of course it can be. That means there's physical outcome, or can be, as an outcome from a dream, from God. Professor Yeshayahu Leibovich, you know, tremendous thinker that, whatever, interesting, very colorful personality, died about 20 years ago, lived in Israel. He had a radio show going on for 7 years on the Parashat Shavua, and then at the end, after that, at some point, it was collected and into a book. I have this, like, that thick. I try to read, you know, his stuff every week for the parsha. Anyway, so he deals with that, and he says the following. כאן לפנינו פעולה פסיכוסומטית. Can you translate to English? Psychosomatic. Action. It's very simple. הווה אומר, תהליכים נפשיים באדם המשפיעים באופן מוחשי על פונקציות פיזיולוגיות. That means something. psychic. That people go, and we know that people that, you know, it's only in their brain, whatever, but they feel physical pain, right? That physically, there are a lot of syndromes and stuff like that that people have, all sorts of whatever, physical manifestations that are caused. Not necessarily belief, because of nothing physical, but because of something that's going on inside the brain, right? עוצמתה הנפשית העצומה הייתה גם השפעת הרבה עד כדי כך תחושת נגיעת כף הירך שגמר ליעקב לצלוע בפועל גם בהקיצור מחלומו. He said the impact of that dream, of that vision that Yaakov had, was so tremendous that it indeed caused him to limp. How many times you heard doctors say, physically, there's nothing wrong with the person. And yet he complains about pain, physical pain, right? But the doctor says he's 100% healthy. Everything is fine. It's all here, right? So that's the explanation that both Rabbi Avraham and Yeshayahu Leibovich bring to that. Okay, we're almost done. So from here, Ramban says the following. Look at number 18. והנה לפי דעתו הזאת, יצטרך לומר כן בהתנען לוט, כי לא באו אמר לכם אל ביתו ולא אפה להם מצות ויוכלו. אבל הכל היה מראה, ואם יעלה את לוט למעלה ממראות הנבואה, איך יהיו אנשי סדום הרעים וחטאים הנביאים, כי מי גיד להם שבאו אנשים אל ביתו? He said, like, you know, by this logic of the Rambam, even the story of Lot and the Malachim didn't happen. And if that didn't happen, who knows if they were actually bad? Maybe they were not. So he says, like, it's like, whoa, we're dealing with virtual reality, like here? Okay, that's not our story. That's not really not our issue today. But his conclusion is, look at the final line, ואלה דברים סותרים הכתוב that contradict what the Torah says, אסור לשומעם אף כי להאמין בהם. One must not listen to those things, i.e. to the Rambam, and never believe in that. Okay, so the Ramban objects so much to what the Rambam says that he said one should not even listen, read, learn the writings of the Rambam. Okay, so the Rambam, just to summarize, the Rambam says, like, well, certain stories in the Torah never happen. It's all vision, prophecies, dreams, whatever. And the Rambam says, this dude is totally wrong, and you must not listen to him, don't read what he says. He is completely wrong. Now, this is actually, believe it or not, it's exactly the same debate between Plato and Aristo. Right? It's the in Plato, it's the approach of the real world. Like the real world is an illusion, right? And I don't want to go into all that philosophy. Aristo says no. The reality is the reality. There's no other thing, right? So let's bring it to our discussion of the Ramban and the Rambam, right? So the Ramban see the reality is the main thing. Reality is the reality, right? This is Aristoteles. And therefore, once we take something into the world of imagination, whether it's a prophecy, whether it's a dream, that means we heard the story and we brought it down from where it is really is, which is the reality. The Rambam, on the other hand, this is the approach of Plato, says no. This is the world, the ideal world. Is it the world of, you know, perhaps, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't happen. It really doesn't matter. That is right. It's not perfect. In every reality, there's imperfections, but not when it comes to the dream. In the dream, in the prophecy, everything is perfect, and therefore, it is better, because that's a perfect reality. Okay, everybody's with me? I know it's a little bit, philosophical. Just a second, let me just finish up. So, if we say that, yeah, but the point is like, you know, it's this idea is like, you know, what is, let's call it stronger or has more validity. If it's a perfect kind of like in lab condition reality, which is the dream, the prophecy, etc., which is the approach of the Rambam, or the reality itself with its imperfections and all that kind of stuff, which is the approach of the Ramban. Okay, so this is, and we're gonna see that the approach, that debate between these two throughout the book. Now, later on, we're gonna see more implications for this machloket, whether it happened or didn't happen. Okay, but we see that it's interesting that the Ramban and the Rambam are debating in the same very point that Aristoteles and Plato were dealing with the approach of realism versus the ideal or the fantasy world, as its pluses and minuses. So this is kind of an intro to the book. Next week we're going to continue. We're going to start looking into the book itself. I think it's going to be a fascinating journey, and I hope that everybody is going to...
I would like to ask you something.
Yes.